What's up, everyone? It's Nir from Blockthrough, the market leader in AdBlock revenue recovery, and you're listening to Slice of Ad Tech. Maximizing revenue is the name of the advertising game for publishers. So on this show, I chat with ad tech industry experts to explore the ideas, strategies, and revenue-making opportunities that they're taking advantage of so the rest of us can start doing the same. Now, let's kick things off. Today, I'm speaking with Cody Bai from NitroPay. Welcome to the show, Cody.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you. So let's just jump right into it. Can we get started with you telling us a little bit how you got your first start in ad tech?
Sure. So originally I was on the content side of things. I kind of got my start doing video game journalism. I was doing a lot of writing for websites like tentonhammer.com and slowly progressed through there. Eventually I was given a role as an ad sales person. And had a few clients that I was working with to get advertising space bought on Tenton Hammer. And that went relatively well. But eventually I moved on and really continued on the content side until I landed at ZAM Network. I was the president of the network and kind of operated all the different sites that were in that umbrella. Again, it was more on the content and publishing side. And really had my first experience with advertising and ad tech there. Like I'd done sales before, but sales was really different from the programmatic side of things, which is kind of where I exist now. And at that time, header bidding, just getting started, and it seemed awesome. Like it did extremely well for all of our sites at ZAM and just really blew the previous waterfall system out of the water. And we were really happy with it. Fast forward a few years, I transitioned away from ZAM. I still really wasn't in the ad tech space. My current team and I, we were trying to still build our own websites. Like we had several different websites in the video gaming space that we were running and, you know, trying to get this same sort of ZAM network sort of experience set up where we had multiple different websites covering multiple different games and usage from various video game players. But we couldn't find like a good ad network to start with. And we tried out a couple different partners. Nobody was really giving us a good experience in terms of both transparency and my guys were extremely strong on the tech side of things. And so they would get a set of code from an ad network at that point in time. And they were just flummoxed by the fact that all they would just receive placements. And they're like, well, want to just receive a placement and a header script from somebody. We want to be able to experiment and do different things and try stuff out, build our own placements if we want to. Why can't we do this? Why is that so hard? They couldn't find a network to do that. So my other co-founders started building their own. They basically built their own header bidding stack for existing sites. And they kind of looked at it and said, okay, this is making us twice as much money as what we were making previously. Can we extend this to other websites? And that was kind of the formation of NitroPay as a product. You know, not really finding a good thing in the space, which is a pretty common sort of entrepreneur getting a product started sort of story, where it's like, hey, we want to solve a problem. But it was a problem that we had on our existing stuff. So it was very organic and very natural. So yeah, that's kind of how I got started in ad tech. Was co-founders then brought me on board to do both the SSP and DSP outreach and publisher outreach. So I'm not a coder. I know the top level of the techs. You talked to me about optimizations around viewability and what are the best use cases and that sort of thing. Anything that a publisher would experience on a day-to-day sort of side of things, that's where I get started. Once you get into the nitty-gritty of like APIs and the JavaScript and HTML and all that stuff, then you know I'm out. I can't do it.
so enough to hold the conversation, but not enough to be dangerous with it.
Exactly. Gotcha. Like you don't want me making recommendations, because then it gets really dangerous really fast. We hired a guy to do that for me, so
that's usually how it works. So we've been hearing a lot of what you've been working on, what you're doing. I kind of want to know a little bit about NitroPay and the types of customers you serve. What's your elevator, your 1 minute elevator pitch for NitroPay?
Yeah, so NitroPay is we see ourselves as a software as a service ad tech platform. It's also managed. Our core three tenets are transparency, simplicity, but also revenue power, the kind of a powerful revenue sort of thing. Like, you know, we didn't want to sacrifice that portion of it for the simplicity and the transparency portion. So those are our core three tenets when we go pitch to a publisher. The kind of the thing that differentiates us a lot from other people in the space is that when somebody gets onto our platform for the first time, they really have control over what placements they put on their page, where they place them, how it interacts with their page. It really makes us attractive to some of the more custom sort of sites that are out there. So video gaming sites, because we were initially NitroPay was built for a video gaming site or sites in this case. And we built that product around the idea of a custom web page. It's not built on WordPress. It's not built on anything like that. There's no template. So we need to be able to put ads wherever we want, however we want. It's very, I don't want to call it self-serve because like we have a very strong customer support and service team. I would say it's a very white glove treatment. It's not really self-serve, but it's self-serve in the fact that a publisher can do what they want. Now, obviously, like if they do something wrong, we will swoop in there and be like, hey, yo, stop. You're doing this wrong. But we have some protections in place to keep people from really shooting themselves in the foot, but they can't do something like 1 second refreshes or something crazy like that. But yeah, that's kind of the stance that we took is like, hey, your fee is right there on your dashboard. We don't hide this thing. We don't wait until the end of the month to tell you how much it costs you. This is how much you're paying us. And when I say pay, it's a revenue share, right? It's like everybody else in the business, but we have that front center on our dashboard. Actionable items on our dash. Oh, I don't want to forget about the dashboard. Our dashboard is arguably one of the best in the business. I'm sure other people will be like, oh no, ours is better, but ours is really good. Since we started in the video gaming space, we used to pull a lot of data and information from APIs from all the different games that we worked with. So World of Warcraft has an API that you use to pull information about the game. League of Legends has an API that you use to pull information about wins and losses and your champions and that sort of thing. And that was what my guys did prior to doing this. So they have all of this database and API data collection, web scraping, that sort of thing, of sort of history and background. Our dashboard has both a custom wrapper that has our own pixel that gives real-time reporting and real-time estimates for how your site is performing overall. But also we ingest all of that different information from all of our various SSPs very quickly and very robustly to where you can run reports on data that came in yesterday. I won't say it's as robust as Google Ad Manager. Anybody that's used that to run reports, it's very similar. Mm-hmm. And it has, I would say the place we do better is that our initial dashboard is all actionable items. So it's CPM, it's RPM, it's viewability, it's all that stuff that you want as a publisher to know right away. And being a publisher, we're like, we want to know these things because these are the things that we can control. These are the things that really impact us from a day-to-day revenue standpoint. So we have guys that are on there all day, every day, like clicking refresh on their dashboard to see how they're doing. And as soon as something's wrong, they're like, hey, Cody, what's going on here? And I'm like, all right, let's look at it and see how we need to tweak. Is something actually wrong, or is one of the SSPs have a data delay or something like that, which happens too. Right? Mm-hmm. So that was the very big overall broad picture of what NitroPay. That is not an elevator pitch. I'm sorry, I can't do elevator pitches. I apologize.
It's all right. This episode is dedicated to you, so it's all good. Don't you worry. But do you want to hone a specific point that you mentioned? So you know, sure, when your publishers see that they're making a mistake or they've enabled something, like you have a team that goes in that helps fixes it. Does your team mm-hmm. also keep an eye on certain like key performance metrics to help with yield optimization? Can you tell me a little bit about what they look for and what they try to optimize?
Yeah. So there's two answers to that. I will say at the very start, we have a bunch of alerts set up. So if somebody does, we'll go to the, like, if something's broken, we have tons of automated alerts that goes off for our internal team. If something isn't reporting right, or if some dumb metric, we actually have what's called a health score report card for the admins of our team that we can go in and be like, hey, are they up? Are they down? How down are they? We can go back and use our own internal tool to see if SSP not reporting or is something actually broken. We had a site just this last week that accidentally reverted code back to AdSense code that they'd had on previously. And we just saw everything just dropped, and they hadn't actually looked at their dashboard for I think like 10 days or something like that. So we immediately got on, we use Discord a lot for a lot of our
really,
yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
Interesting. So, okay.
Yeah, we're a weird company. So we do, we have both like an automated support ticketing system set up, but we also supplement that with real-time interactions with people because I have, it doesn't scale especially well. So there are times where we're just like, oh God, why do we do it like this? But the publishers and the people that we interact with on there, really respectful of our time, to be honest. And they do not take up a bunch of time for us internally. And we found that the relationship that we end up having with publishers, that we have that sort of like really close sort of interaction with in real time, it's just so much better than a support tail. I want to be able to get on the phone with somebody or get on a chat with somebody and be like, help, this is broken. This is my money. Help me fix it. That's what I want. And I'm like, what would I want as a publisher? I want somebody to be able to chat with. Anyway, optimizations. You were talking about optimizations. Let's get back on that. So optimization-wise, we definitely have a recommendation that we give to publishers. Sometime we will have a full kind of audit scenario. Like, here's your site. Here's where we would place ads. If it was us, we do that. We usually draft it up really quickly. That's based off of our experiences where it's like, what are the units that are most valuable? Now, video is kind of dipping a little bit, which sucks, but it's not a huge deal. But like any of those being sticky placements are really valuable in terms of revenue. You know, video is also often sticky and moves around as well, but those are valuable because of viewability. We work with a ton of SPAs. I say SPAs, single page applications, mm-hmm. where just certain parts of the content will change on the page, but not necessarily the whole page itself. And so on those pages, like having those sort of sticky units that just kind of linger and are always there, like those are great. So we optimize on viewability. We optimize on best use cases that we've seen throughout our network. Like, we service over 400 different sites now. And we've found that there's definitely some differences between what sort of content is on a page, how well they perform. But there is like a core common denominator in terms of, here's where you place your ads, here's where they go, here's where they go without going over that threshold of like too many ads per page, right? Because I mean, Blockthrough's really, if you're getting ads through Blockthrough, you have to have that sort of like, have stuff that isn't sticky, because that's going to be important for getting your Blockthrough revenue in, or having things that exist on the page but are more acceptable.
Yeah, category. Like we want to focus on non-intrusive ad formats and ensure that the end user, like our main goal is to ensure that the end user is not inundated with ads. But at the same time, I can appreciate that for like on your side of the spectrum, like you want to be using ad units and formats that garner the highest CPMs and whatnot. And typically that does tend to be video at some times.
We do, before we even start the sort of recommendation process with the publisher, we usually tell them, hey, what we're going to do is give you, like, if you were just concerned about monetization, here's the full package. This is the most intrusive package that you could get. We don't recommend you doing this because you are going to make your users so upset at you. You're going to lose revenue through losing users, mm-hmm. right? And we don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. We want your users to stick around because your users are our users at the end of the day, because we get a percentage of the revenue. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, if you're not making money, we're not making money. We want to make sure that you make money. And so, yeah, we'll toss that over and be like, here for your site, here is 100% monetization. Now, here are the most intrusive units. Here's how you would kind of dial that back a little bit. And here's kind of recommended package that we do. And that's usually the package that the publishers go with. Now, that being said, we definitely have publishers that are like, can we put this advertisement right here? Because we've got like 50 pixels here that we can squeeze an ad in. And I'm like, okay, guys, like that's fine. I don't think that's going to do much for you. But yes, you'll be able to squeeze a little bit more water from that stone, right?
at least for a single page application, is there like almost like a magic number of ad units before it gets a little too much for the end user, where it's like after this point it's just diminishing returns?
You know, it's interesting, SPAs, they do extremely well, and I think they do extremely well because often there isn't a lot of scrolling, and so you have almost 100% viewability on your page all the time. Mm-hmm. And the way we recommend a user, basically we recommend for people using an SPA to do things that kind of continue to populate. So there's like, what is that? I'm trying to remember what the term would be, but basically setting it up where that user doesn't stay static, or that banner doesn't stay static.
Oh, so use ad refresh?
Yeah. All of our stuff refreshes. Mm-hmm. So because of video game sites tend to have really long visit times, linger times. Mm-hmm. And so we want refreshes to be not high per se, but like on the higher side of average, between 30 seconds and 60 seconds. We only refresh when an ad unit is visible. So we have detection on our side to make sure that there's a lot of people that are trying to like sell it as a product now. And I'm like, we've done that. We've always done that. I don't know why that's a thing. But yeah. So on SPAs, refreshing is very critical. And even like refreshing on user action as well is also pretty critical for an SPA, because you could end up in a situation where you hit sort of refresh limit on how many units have appeared. Tech's interesting in that way, where we have a limit on the number of refreshes a certain ad unit can do, because we don't want to have any sort of crazy memory leak things where maybe somebody has the page open and the screen's actually viewable, but you don't want them refreshing ad units forever because their computer's just going to crash and die. Because even though we would love if, you know, all creators of ads were exceptional coders, that's not necessarily the case. And there's often memory leaks in creatives that come through. You compound that by however many Google tabs you have open. And like, there's a reason why Google is a memory hog. It's not necessarily because of Chrome, it's because of all the different ads that are running in the background of these screens. But it's gotten better, thankfully. People are not refreshing or running ads as often.
And like, I think to summarize from a yield optimization standpoint, I heard a lot of interesting and good points where you had mentioned, you know, firstly, like setting up those alerts. I think that if you're a single publisher or if you're an ad network with multiple publishers, like whatever your success metric is, whether for a single publisher, if it's like traffic to a page or specific revenue metrics for a network like yourself, maybe noticing if an account has gone silent, like setting up those types of alerts that monitor your success metrics from the get-go is really going to help you ensure that you don't miss anything. So I think it is important to note, like something as simple as setting up alerts, whether it's your Jira, Confluence, whatever support system, even I think GAM, does GAM also allow for alert setting?
I don't know. So the way our stuff is, this is how much of a, I won't call us a snowflake, but we're unique. We're unique.
It's a good, that's a good spin.
Yeah, we're unique. We actually don't utilize, because of our own reporting stack, like we utilize GAM for Google stuff specifically, but we actually don't run anyone else through GAM. It's all through our own. So we don't use GAM for alerts because it would miss any other SSPs were having issues, then we would miss it.
Okay, so tell me, so have you like at NitroBay ran any experiments or seen any successful experiments that in terms of yield optimization, revenue optimization that you think publishers could try running as well on their end? Maybe even checks or balances?
Yeah. Definitely, I think this is pretty common knowledge at this point, but viewability is like, I advocate for viewability all the time. Now, clearly there's like there's a spectrum there, because you want to make sure you're getting the impressions that you need to be a successful site. You know, the higher viewability, the better. If you can increase your viewability by 10, 20, 30%, that correlates directly to revenue. So we,
and is that just in terms of increasing or improving your viewability, is that just straight up you know, trying different ad formats or trying different ad placements
for sure. Formats, sometimes it depends on we're talking about formats, like if it's a sticky or an overlay, those units usually do extremely well.
Do you have any ideas on what's like the best ad placements that you've seen, either for like an SPA or like a regular publisher, like a regular website?
Anchors are amazing. They've existed for quite a while, but I think we've gotten to a point where everybody has accepted anchors to a certain degree. Like I say everybody, like all the users have accepted anchors. You know, they're pretty common, like an AdSense anchor now. And so it's showing up on any site that has existed or monetized for any length of time. Anchors still continue to do extremely well. I think they're technically classified as outstream video placements, but the ones that run along the gutters, they do great. In terms of an SSP, like definitely want to utilize an anchor if it exists. Most of our SPAs utilize side rails at this point as well. So usually it's like a 160 by 600, 300 by 600, or 300 by 250 setup in there, or whatever bids the best, that sort of thing. So I feel like that's all common knowledge, but maybe it's not. But most of our experiments have typically been kind of around those lines, where it's like, and I hate saying experiments because we try really hard to get people set up really well the first time, so any sort of iterations that they do after that are they're smaller iterations rather than big grand experiments.
But I think it's still fair. Like, yes, those concepts may still be around for a while, but it's still true to continuously test and iterate your placements, your formats, what works and what doesn't infringe upon your user experience.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. The stuff that video is doing right now is really interesting because I think we've come to a point in time where the video as a unit placement is so valuable for such a long time because it was kind of new format and it was interesting and had a lot of stuff going on. And it still is to a degree. But anybody that's ran video for the last 3 years has definitely seen a slow downturn in how valuable that video inventory is because there's so much video inventory now available through Outstream units. And Outstream units, specifically in-banner Outstream units. Google has pushed in-banner Outstream, and that's done extremely well for both, I would assume, for both Google and for our network. But at the same time, it's going to be interesting because I think that other video inventory is still valuable. It's just trying to figure out how to make it more valuable, have it have a differentiation between having that sort of like in stream, in content, in article video format have more value than the outstream video format. And I think they're correlating right now. And it really shouldn't be, right? Like one should be bigger, bolder, more valuable, and more interesting for a user to engage with than the outstream banner unit.
Right.
But yeah, I would say that's the more interesting thing. I wouldn't call that an experiment per se, but we've definitely seen that sort of like both these units, one's going up, one's going down. They're kind of in the middle. But I feel like one of them has to go back up at some point by one of them. I mean, in-stream and article unit. There's some talk about having the more valuable one start with sound on, which that gives me the heebie-jeebies as an internet browser because I'm rolling around with my headphones on and listening to music. And then all of a sudden a video audio or an auto audio video ad hits. And it just like blasts in my ears, right? Like that's not cool.
Yeah.
No user likes that sort of thing. So,
which is why it's not considered an acceptable ad format because it's so disruptive, at least from like on our side of things.
But like I was just looking at the IAB video doc recently and that's what they're considering in-stream placements now is stuff with, or at least the IAB is, with auto sound on. And I'm like, no, that should never be the case. I mean, unless you're on YouTube with the YouTube sound on, which it's fine. But I feel like that's a different sort of,
because you're on YouTube, you're expecting to hear
you're
something.
You're on YouTube. Yeah. Exactly. That should be a completely separate category of advertising than we're on a website. That website might have video content on it. I could choose to listen to that video content, but I'm not primarily here to browse video content. I'm here to browse the other content. But if I want to, I want to watch that video content, so I should be able to turn that on. So yeah, I get really frustrated by, we're soapboxing a little bit here, but I get really frustrated around advertising formats that are intrusive for no reason, right? Like the auto audio is one of my least favorite formats because it is just never a good experience to me because like web browsing is such like a visual thing. Primarily, like often I will listen to a podcast and browse the internet at the same time. I may not be getting like a good focus on either of them at the same time, but that's what a lot of people do. I feel like we're not browsing the internet with no sound on. We've got music or a podcast or Netflix open in another tab or whatever. And I don't understand why there's always, okay, let me rewind that. I do understand why there's a push to try to make intrusive ads because there is a conceit among advertisers that is going to be more valuable, right? Because it's taking up more real estate space, it's taking up more of the content of the site. But I want to push back on that and say that I don't think that there is more value in that. I remember the first time I saw a skin on a website. Like one of those full branded website things. It was on IGN.com. And I like IGN. This was like 15 years ago too. So whatever. That's might've been 20 years ago. I was in high school. I remember when I saw this, it was 20 years ago and it's still stuck in my brain because it was this huge McDonald's ad and it played like a sound and video and just, it was gross. And Like, I've eaten at McDonald's since then, I will admit, but I like, it was not a good brand experience for me. And so I'm like, marketers, advertisers, please listen to me. Do not push overtly disruptive marketing thinking that it's going to do your brand favors. Like, it won't. Nobody that spends a lot of time on the internet likes it. It's not good. Maybe you'll convince somebody that it's good, but generally it won't. Banners are great. Banners are your friends. Outstream video placements, cool. The sound is awesome. Don't. I'm on the internet all day. Please don't make my browsing experience worse.
No, it's fair. It's kind of funny because this episode, I wanted to learn more about you and NitroBay, but you're touching on a lot of things that actually Blockthrough is trying to push for. Like, the whole thing here is to focus mainly on the user experience to ensure that they don't get those jarring, disruptive ad experiences when they're just going through the regular web. Yeah. Like, we want to ensure that they see ads, like ad formats that are specific in compliance with acceptable ad standard. But essentially, it's like, you know, not the autoplay ads, not the automated ads, things like that. Like, it's a seamless experience.
I'll pull it back and say that we at NitroPay believe the same thing. And I think there's a spectrum. I think the acceptable ads idea is great. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think you can still have a pleasant user experience without necessarily always adhering strictly to those acceptable ads things. Like, as long as my content is not impacted, as long as my experience is not impacted, it's a good thing. I think there are ways to do that even with like stickies and overlays, right? Like, those can still exist and those aren't necessarily intrusive on the user experience, just depending on like what size your screen is and what size the ads are. Like, if it's a 970 by 250 anchor unit, that's huge. It's a humongous unit that's at the bottom. That is an intrusive experience. I would not push that on anybody. But the 728 by 90s on a 1440 screen, it's like a bookmark, right? It's like tiny. It's itsy bitsy. Yeah. So I think publishers in general care about their users. I've met very few publishers that are like, screw the users, we just want money. Those people don't exist, or at least they're few and far between. Ironically, it's probably when the company gets bigger that happens more often, because it's like, we've got a bottom line. And we work a lot with, and I know you wanted to ask this question at some point, we work a lot with one to two man teams that are the publishers. Those guys and gals are the kind of what I consider to be the standard internet publisher. It's like a person who is very passionate about a topic, who has started a website because they're passionate about whatever this thing is. Sometimes they're more passionate, sometimes they're less passionate, doesn't matter. But usually it's kind of, it isn't started as a money-making experience. And so when you're, so in NitroPay's, this is our core kind of user. When that's your core user, you want to create formats for them that are going to be okay with their, with the users that they have on their website. And so that is absolutely one of our core tenets too. I've said so many at this point. Apparently have a whole ton of core tenets. But there's some other SSPs that have similar sort of phrase lines now as well. As like, hey, we put publishers first, that sort of thing. You know? And I think that's great, because that still aligns with that idea of like, if you're aligning with a publisher who's like that, you're also aligning with the user. But I think in general, we want to exist to make that publisher money, because their site takes time to exist and run, but it's the user that we're there for, because that user exists because that guy or that gal is extremely passionate about the site, has made something that they want to use, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I think that what you're doing at Blockthrough is great, and the acceptable ad stuff is great, but I think, you know, NitroPay and some other ad networks as well want folks to monetize and still have that non-intrusive experience, or that sort of acceptable experience, without necessarily fitting within the confines of that box, because it's pretty rigid and we want to make sure that people make money. So
yeah, I hear you. Speaking of publishers, what are three things you think publishers should be focusing on going into 2023?
The death of the cookie is going to happen at some point. I don't know if it's happening or when it's going to happen at this
point. She's coming. She's coming. We don't know when, but she's coming.
I feel like it's that sort of like, she's the Grim Reaper, right? That's like slowly traversing. Or it's that, that's that meme. It's like, you hit one, it's like GDPR. The other one's IDFA. That one's gone. And it's like, okay, here we come. It's that, you know, the Reaper is going to come through that door at some point.
Is NitroPay doing anything with regards to the third party cookie problem?
Yeah. We are partnered with a bunch of different, I mean, kind of those sort of standard identifier.
Mm-hmm. Identity solutions?
Entities.
Yeah,
exactly. We have a couple of those, and we've developed an internal SDK that people can hook into if they have first-party data to monetize off of that. It seems like there's the initial solution is going to be tied to email from what exists like right now with the identification solutions. I don't know if that's going to be the way we do it forever, but it seems like a kind of a fit. I'm really curious to see, and this is more of a, I don't know if it's a question to you or just a question to the void, the ether, but I'm really curious to see what ad values do, because there is like sort of like creeping dread of we're going to lose 50 to 60% of CPMs immediately. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if that's true, because so for me, I'm a video gamer, play a lot of video games. We've covered that already. Mm-hmm. There are a whole host of video game websites that do not require logins, right? Go, you browse through the content. Any wiki site definitely doesn't have a lot of logins from their users. They mostly just have like a login for people that are going to edit the wikis, but that's like, that's about it. The question is, and I think I saw this maybe posed on AdOps. I'm not sure where it was posed. It was on Reddit somewhere. But the question was, are we going to move to a world where all websites require logins? Because that, like, if we're going to lose 50, 60% of value on people that aren't logged in, it's like the publishers aren't going to want to do that. But at the same time, there are publishers out there. Like we have a publisher who says, hey, my users will not want to log in because they don't want to they don't want to have their identity exposed in any way, shape, or form because of kind of the stuff that they're looking up, right? Like it's value of in-game items in a particular game. And it's like, I don't want my user ID to be associated with this because the moment that it is, people will realize I've got $40,000 of in-game items and they're going to want to steal my account. And I'm like, I totally get that. And I feel like that use case is more common than we think because it's like, okay, if I'm, let's say I'm going onto some like Mercedes-Benz or something like Maserati, well, you know, Porsche, some really high caliber car website or a car forum, but let's say a car forum, you know, for Porsche or whatever. It's like, I want to go on there and I just want to find parts or whatever, but I don't want to log in because the moment I log in, it's like, okay, people now have a piece of an ID for me that's a little bit more, you know, a little bit more tied than what I was previously out there. I don't know. Like, I don't.
Well, isn't that where contextual targeting comes into play there? Where
yes, contextual targeting. And contextual targeting is an old technology, and I think that is definitely going to be more valuable soon than people are giving credit for. And I think you're right. I think that the contextual targeting piece is going to be actually what picks up that value more than the first-party data side of it. I think first-party data is going to be interesting, and I think it's an interesting piece to include. I don't think it's as much of an end-all, be-all as kind of what certain proponents are advocating it for it to be, because I just don't see the internet as a whole deciding to log into websites.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to log in just to certain, I don't know, like recipes, like how to make a specific chicken fry, but.
Oh, that is so true. I mean, there's a whole industry of ad networks out there that just rely on these sort of recipe blogs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and nobody logs into recipe blogs. Nobody.
But on that point, though, on that point with contextual targeting, so this is what this is kind of a problem that I see very often. Like, I see a lot of content out there that says like, "Oh, don't worry about first cookies going away. You can just switch to contextual targeting." I feel like we don't talk about a lot how, as a publisher, to get started into that. Like, what should publishers be looking into? What data points should they be compiling in order to build that contextual targeting audience?
I feel like from a contextual targeting standpoint, like, you just need to make sure that you have enough information on your page about the content that you that is there, that exists, that a contextual targeting system could like square in on the sort of demographic that you have. So I mean, a good example of a publisher that we had that was a really interesting sort of example of contextual targeting, and I know it was contextual targeting because it was like, it there wasn't any other sort of indicators there that it was anything else but contextual, a tech-driven solution is like, I had a Magic the Gathering mm-hmm. website as one of my publishers. Mm-hmm. He messages me on Discord and he says, oh my God, Cody, like, are you targeting us with some sort of direct campaign or something like that? I was like, no, not on that specific thing. He's like, well, check this out. And he was looking at, this is going to get really nerdy. I'm sorry, who anybody, if you don't know Magic the Gathering, he was looking at a specific deck. It was a blue mana deck for something that he was building. And in that deck was a, you know, there are key cards that would really make up the kind of the core of this deck. And he was just looking at like a single card for that. Over on the right hand side, there was a, you know, a 300 by 600 unit that had exactly the cards that he needed to make this deck into a cohesive thing. It was crazy. Like, I had never seen anything that was that specific, but whatever tools this contextual targeting advertisement was using, it was doing a damn good job. It was literally like five cards that would just fit super nicely into this deck that he was constructing.
So it was hyper targeted.
It was hyper targeted. Right. And I think it was probably a combination of both contextual targeting of like, hey, is this a Magic the Gathering site? Yes or no. And then like, what kind of cards are these? Are these blue? Mm-hmm. Okay. What do I see in the data there? Oh, there it is. Yeah. I mean, and it was for a specific card buying website. Mm-hmm. And so I think they had come up with this contextual targeting algorithm or mm-hmm. whatever that really pointed them at like, hey, if these cards are being shown or if somebody's talking about these cards in a particular website, run this advertisement. And it's like, there it was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that is so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think there's cool stuff like that happens all the time in advertising though. And like, it freaked him out because it was so well hyper-targeted. But you couldn't have hyper-targeted on that specific. I don't think it could have been hyper-targeted on that specific page because that was one. It was like a random card in the middle of all this stuff. And it had to have been some degree of contextual targeting because it did not include the card that was he was actually looking at. It was other cards that would fit into that deck. So, I mean, there's stuff like that that happens all the time. And I feel like contextual tech is really smart already. You go navigate around and find yourself on a page for a specific item. It's pretty highly likely that you're going to see something that's appropriate for that item. Or if you might have cookies that are super persistent that are chasing you around the internet too, but those are going away.
No, it's fair. Just before we wrap up, do you have two other things that maybe publishers should be focusing on before coming into next year?
I mean, viewability. I'm going to hit fair. It again. That's a big one. Other things that publishers should be looking at, maybe not necessarily for the content or the tech that they're looking at, but 2020, like the end of 2022 has been super weird, mm-hmm. like very flat. I put out a newsletter last week about how Q4 has been in more of a slump than I've ever seen it.
Right.
Anyway, the seasonality has been pretty minimal in terms of that upward trajectory. I just really think that publishers should hold on and make and don't panic mm-hmm. because it's just like any sort of market volatility, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's fine to experiment. Mm-hmm. And I guess let's say that in 2023, I would definitely urge publishers to experiment mm-hmm. because I think the start of 2023, the rates are going to be pretty low. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gives them a good opportunity to try new things, check out new things, maybe do or redesign some other formats that they haven't necessarily looked at before in the past. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just talk with whoever's on your team, whether that's an internal ads tech group or network like ours, just have a conversation with them and see what there's something that you can do and make some optimizations or make some changes. And
no, that makes sense. And on that note, I just want to take a moment to thank you so much, Cody, for taking time to speak to us today and for our listeners for tuning in. I think we learned a lot of things going as far back as, you know, setting up those alerts based on your success metrics, experimenting and trying around with different ad formats, ad placement, whether you are on a single page application or if you have like a regular website, and also keying into what's happening with like third-party cookies, trying your hand at contextual advertising and whatnot. So I think we got a lot today. So thank you for that. For our listeners, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Slice of Ad Tech on Spotify, Amazon, Google, and Apple Podcasts so you never miss an episode. Know someone who you'd love to hear from or think is a great fit for our next episode? Send your suggestions to marketing@blockthrough.com or just say hi. We love hearing from you. This is Nira, and I'll see you next time.